one of the issues that was talked about was what is the truly renewable nature of this sort of resource? You know, does it deplete and how quickly does it happen and so forth? So maybe that's something we'd like to talk about, Professor, while we're getting a few more questions from the floor.
Sure, thank you. That's a great question because geothermal, although it is classified by a number of agencies as a renewable resource, is fundamentally different than other renewables in terms of the time scale. It's certainly not the same as waves or wind or solar in that context. But what we viewed in this report, and I think has been studied quite carefully in the past, is, well, what is the actual renewability, if you will? Once we mine the heat out of a local section of hot rock, a local volume of hot rock, how long might it take to come back? Well, you have to think about how you would actually commercially operate a typical geothermal reservoir. And in our analysis that we carried out in this study, we talked about 5 to 10 years of operation of a given local heat mine, if you want to refer to it as that way. And then you would leave that site. The thermal properties of rock are such that the influence upon, say, as I go outwards in distance away from that local reservoir, falls off quite rapidly. And although the reservoir itself may be a cubic kilometer, the domain of rock around that remains largely the same as it was before you started this heat extraction process. And so the natural processes of thermal conduction and radiogenic generation of heat would continue after you abandon that site. And it, roughly speaking, if you operated the site for 10 years, within 20 to 30 years, the initial thermal regime would be restored. So if you think about this domain that we're talking about that has these millions of exajoules and a distribution which is fairly widespread, when we had the geodynamics group talking to us, they're talking about a very, very large resource in this is Cooper Basin site, and I think similar things you're finding around other parts of South Australia, you could literally have a heat mine operating locally at 5 or 6 kilometers, leave that alone for a few years, and then come back to it. So there is renewability on a time scale which is maybe 2 to 3 times the production period of that reservoir. So it's not days and it's not hours, but it's definitely a lot different than fossil resources with that respect.
Thank you. I'm Simon Devetch at Big Switch. You talked a little bit about Basel and the seismic issues
right.
that happened there and said you could heard a fuller report on this. I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit. It certainly made a bit of press.
I don't know how many of you are familiar with what happened in the Basel, Switzerland experiment, but this is a pretty unique situation. Basel as a city has been around a long time, a lot longer than the United States and certainly parts of Australia. In the 1300s, they had a severe earthquake that leveled the entire city. And interestingly enough, it sits on a fairly aseismic, low seismicity region. This is not the same as you would have in a geothermal, active geothermal area where you would have lots of seismic events. Small seismic events, not damaging, but small, let's call them stress relievers that occur in time. This was not the case in Basel. The people knew that developed this resource. They did a very careful job of informing the public officials about the possibility, of, particularly during the hydraulic stimulation stages and pressurization, that they might feel some small seismic activity. And they have the entire city well instrumented. Now, what's different about Basel versus, I think, a lot of the geothermal development that certainly that's going on in Australia and even in the United States is these wells were actually drilled within the city limits of this old ancient city in Switzerland. And so the seismic net, if you will, goes outward from the city. It's also unusually located that you have France, Germany, and Switzerland coming together at sort of a triple point. And so you have some sensitivity to other countries as well if you're going to induce seismic events. And they definitely did have a small event. This was a Richter magnitude slightly over 3, so it's noticeable. What's different about this from a traditional earthquake, if you will, is that its source is fairly shallow, in this case 5 to 6 kilometers rather than very deep in the earth. I'm not a seismologist, but the people who have looked at this reassure me that this does happen frequently. It's not a completely anomalous event. But what happened afterwards, particularly the relationship that developed between the developers and the media, and I think the growing concern, and I believe this is necessarily exaggerated outside of the scientific domain, that this would lead to a serious earthquake that would do damage and perhaps devastate the city, was highly exaggerated. But nonetheless, it points out to the importance of siting these locations such that you're aware, let's say, of the potential of seismic risk. We have 100-plus years of operating geothermal systems, and to our knowledge, not one of those sites has ever had an induced earthquake that led to the kind of damage that you might expect in a magnitude 5 or 6 earthquake. You have a lot of low-level seismic activity, which is natural. So this is an area that, as we pointed out in our report, has to be handled carefully. It is not a showstopper. Management and effective control is an important point. Yes. Hope that answers. It's a long answer, but it's a complicated question. Right.
Yeah, Jeff, Chris Matthews, Torrens Energy. I was just going to say you worked for a long time at Fenton Hill, and you would have done a lot of studies into the long-term behaviour of EGS there. There's a lot of positive outcomes, of course, of that study. Would you be able to briefly describe some of the very positive long-term outcomes that came out of Fenton Hill?
I'm not sure I got the whole question, but...
Worked at Fenton Hill.
And right, I worked at Fenton Hill and was involved with the project up until when the site was shut down in around 2000 or so, the turn of the century. And the site, of course, was very active in the late 70s and through the 80s. And like other pioneering efforts, there was a steep learning curve, in terms of particularly drilling equipment and measurement tools that did not work well at the kind of conditions we had within that reservoir. This was also at a fairly early stage of using micro seismic event mapping for reservoir location. Nonetheless, re-examination of some of the Fenton Hill data, particularly the reservoir size data and the connectivity that was achieved between a less than optimal well placement system, was quite remarkably similar to some of the other experiments going on in different geologic settings. But when you're talking about an early deployment of a technology some 30 years ago, and we look at what's happened in oil and gas production now and in drilling technology, if we had the tools available now and re-performed the Fenton Hill experiment, I think that there would be a much shorter period of time. And I think you're seeing that. I mean, certainly the Cooper Basin experiments, the Saltz experiments have all benefited from what has been learned in the past. But so it's a good question, and it's hard to stress the importance enough of international cooperation here. It's a fairly small community, and I think that sharing scientific information in detail serves everyone well, and we're glad to see that happen. That certainly happened in this study. Geodynamics was fairly forthright in presenting all the data, so that was good. So I hope that gets at the point. Thank you.
Actually, two questions for you. What do you consider the key pre-drill uncertainty for EGS opportunities? And separately, because I had some conversation at our table, could you expand upon that issue of sustainability with respect to water?
Okay. So let's. It's probably hard to say that there's a one-size-fits-all to that characteristic you're looking for, but based on a true EGS system where reservoir stimulation is the critical attribute you're going after, I would say that detailed knowledge of the in-situ stress field at depth, at the depth and temperatures of interest, is the critical thing you need to know about. And we were fooled at Fenton Hill in the early days. I think there were some surprises that they find, and once you get down to depth and you start to do some preliminary testing. So careful analysis of the geologic setting in detail in terms of stress field is a critical variable. The drillability of it, you can always spend more money and drill a hole, but you want to make sure you understand that you're doing that in an optimal way. And we had an analysis in this assessment of learning curves, if you will, for drilling, and I think they're quite acceptable for what we've seen in oil and gas drilling. You're going to have to drill a lot of wells for geothermal in a given field, so that won't be the issue as much as perhaps understanding the characteristics of the reservoir in that stress area. And as far as renewability goes with respect to water, in certain parts of the U.S., water is equally as valuable and precious as it is in Australia, for sure. I gave the one example of the hydrothermal system in Reno. I think this is the way of the future, not necessarily an anomaly, where total reinjection, which would be part of any EGS system, and perhaps going to drier cooling or dry, wet-dry cooling where you can minimize the use of cooling water would be important. Fortunately, though, there are a lot of potential development of geothermal in coastal regions as well, where you could have perhaps easier access to some of the cooling water, but the management of the reservoir fluids will still be important. But it is renewable in the sense that water management, subsurface water management, would have to be part of the game for sure.
Two more questions, this gentleman here. And
sure.
That Peter Reed.
Peter Moser from Business SA. I really enjoyed your presentation. When you look at the cost of energy, electricity,
right.
it's probably fair to say that coal forms the sort of the lower end and photovoltaic the higher end. In your view, have you done any modeling on what the price of carbon would need to be to make a technology such as geothermal economically viable?
Well, the supply curve that I showed, I can just go back to this just to reassure you. This red line that's shown on this graph represents no additional offsets to the market price of electricity as a result of the cost of carbon. There are no carbon taxes. On the blue line, which is equally important, there is no subsidies that are at all involved in further, no production tax credits, no renewable portfolio standards. So what would happen if you had those two things happening simultaneously, namely a concern about carbon, either a carbon tax or the cost of carbon sequestration to get there, the red line would move up and the blue line would move down. So when the blue and red lines cross is where you have the break-even condition, where you have competitive electricity. So this would even occur earlier if that were to occur in a big way. We tried to avoid that. We tried to take the conservative position that there would be no subsidies, which is pretty much what it used to be in the U.S., and that we wouldn't have carbon taxes, which we don't have. But it's a key point, and equally important, I believe, is that you're going to, when you start to do this, you're not going to be just competing with oil and gas rigs for drilling, which has got this local sort of instability to it when we see a rise in oil prices. You're going to have a whole fleet of geothermal drilling rigs, and individual companies that are in the geothermal business will have their own rigs, and they won't be bidding on going after oil and gas rigs. And so that will also change this. We were traditionally using U.S. drilling costs in this, driven by the ups and downs of supply and demand on rigs. Good question.